I may and have
rolling. Oh, sorry, friend. Now talk. Now say something. Hello, everyone.
Hi. Hello there.
Hello.
My name is Mike McCafferty.
My name is Matt Stompy Thompson.
And I'm Jason McCarris. And I forgot what my title is.
Chief Engineer, Jason McCarris.
That's right. Stompy I'm Chief Thompson. Engineer. Right.
And I have been cast adrift here. I am floating here through time and space, as you can see. Much like Commander Burnham. Disgraced Commander Burnham. Placed in jail Commander Burnham. Then rescued by Mirror Universe Lorca Commander Burnham. or Lieutenant, where she was then elevated to Commander. Briefly made Captain. Then placed to the side so that evil Emperor Giorgio could become captain of the Discovery, then taken away from that so that her, I'm recapping everyone here, so that her adoptive brother Spock could be saved from Section 31 and the nanite control, not Get Smart control. And at the last minute, they were plunged in through a wormhole to save the 23rd century, which was ultimately unnecessary because they saved it before they went in there. But that's my recap of the of 20 episodes of Discovery.
You know, that's interesting that you bring that up because I enjoyed this episode very much. Then when they got to this season on Discovery, it's like, oh yeah, all these other terrible people are in it that I don't care about. Like, oh, this, I was really enjoying this. Oh, I forgot all that stuff that you just mentioned.
Well, I like it. And as watching this episode, because Mr. Thompson kind of chided me into watching it. And I was like, okay, I'll give it another shot. And it reminded me of how much I enjoyed the first episode of season two. We're like, oh, look at us. Yeah. We're just plowing through it. And then like the last eight episodes are like, and then we got Red Angels, and we got to do this, and then people are getting jabbed through the eye with needles, and it's like,
yeah. Oh, I forgot all about that stuff.
Remember that? There's like that goofball who's with Section 31, and he's looking through the periscope, and then ejects
yeah.
the eye.
I thought that was all left to Picard. All the stabbing and removing eyes and body parts, and
that's right. They have a thing with stabbing and removing eyes.
Yeah,
and I posted on my Twitter. They have this fixation for trying to find a Han Solo. They're desperately, all their bad robots are looking for Han Solo.
And I think they've got one now in Discovery.
Yes, with Book/Cleveland Booker.
Books. Yes.
Well, I appreciate that he's an environmental.
environmentalist. Heart of gold, baby.
Well, they had the Star Trek IV whales at the end and everything.
Appreciate this. It does harken to some of the original topics of what Star Trek is about, which is, about social issues. And that's one of the social issues we're facing here, so.
People who pray to plants that pop out of the ground.
Listen to plants, whatever you want, I listen to.
Are you praying?
I am 21st century.
Well, sort of.
Yeah. I save animals by stealing dilithium and vaporizing dozens of people who are just doing their job. Frontline workers, frontline Andorian workers, Tellarites, who are vaporized because all they know is that, like, hey, these goofballs like shot up our space station. Go get them, and then they're mercilessly destroyed by the zoologist person and by Federation enthusiasts.
Zoologist.
How dare you? Are you really gonna make a stand on that?
Zoologist.
Yeah. Die on that hill.
I didn't appreciate what are the people in the from the original series from Journey to Babel? What was that? Was it a Tellarite? I forget what it was. You saw it in this episode for a second.
I just said Tellarite. So you're so busy correcting me. It's zoology. You're like,
zoology. Zoology. Look it up.
All right. Zoology. Well, so first of all, let me just station identification.
I gotta go steal a dump truck and a lemur. And this is what happens in the Bay Area up here. People are stealing dump trucks and lemurs.
This is what happens when we have Matt on the pod.
Can I stop the boat here for a second here and say this is our podcast called I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek.
Yes.
It is a podcast, and now it is a pivot to video.
Yeah. Slash slideshow. PowerPoint presentation.
PowerPoint presentation. Well, it keeps us a little bit on task here. So if you want to go to our Facebook page, our vibrant Facebook page, we had a lot of discussions about stuff here. But you can listen to it or watch into it either way you want. Although the quality goes down a little bit. But when Zoom translate this to like a M4A, I think. It's not as good of quality. Jason will fix this at some point in time.
Jason fixes it all, yes.
But if I'm doing it on GarageBand or even on Audio Hijack, it's better. So if you're listening to us as a podcast, I apologize. But today we are talking about Discovery's third season. And what is it called? Hope is what you wish for. A star is what you want. I can't remember the name of it.
When you wish upon a Starfleet. When you wish upon a Starfleet.
When you wish upon a Starfleet.
That's kind of actually a better. To be honest, I actually really like that. Because that is exactly what they're doing in this episode. They're wishing upon a Starfleet. They want this to become real again.
I thought it when I saw this gentleman that you put on the slide here, which I loved that. I will get to it, but I loved that guy. I don't know if you were. Felt as emotional about that as I did, but I was like, oh, that's really cool.
Are you
seeing on the screen there his screen sharing? The Indian Pakistani gentleman, I don't know what race he is.
In the very beginning and the very end of the episode.
Yeah, who's the last guy from Starfleet.
What are you watching right now? Are you not watching the screen?
I'm watching you guys. I don't. What screen is it? I'm watching you guys. Oh, here you are. Sorry, I had it slid over to the left. Sorry. Yes, I see him now. Sector. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
I'm very technical. Go ahead.
Press the zoology button. I went to great effort.
Zoology button.
This is honestly, I have to commend Mike because this is maybe the most preparation I've ever seen him put into a podcast anytime.
you missed the last one where I talked about the last episode of Enterprise and how it deeply is very effective for Riker's arc of becoming a grandmaster pizza chef. Basically from
yes
the, yeah I had PowerPoint, I had video, I was very excited about this, but I think this keeps us a little more on task. This guy, his name is, we'll see it at the end of this PowerPoint slide, but it's a fun little, like, he has that bird, that digital bird which wakes him up
that
he swats the away
bird clock
bird clock
and that changes colors.
It changes color.
Kind of, it's kind of a great opening. I don't know, how'd you guys feel about the opening of this episode?
I liked it.
I mean,
I liked it too.
Yeah, it's this guy who's patiently waiting for the rebirth of the Federation. Kind of a thankless job, kind of a dumb job, to be honest. Yeah. It's like, I mean, go find him. You got 40 years, go find these people. But he's sitting there steadfast. He's waiting.
Flushed every day.
Gets his
this was the J.J. Abrams mystery box that they opened at the beginning. Who is this guy with the bird?
Yes, which they do answer at the end of this episode.
Yes, I was going to say, that's the exception, that they actually answered the question of what's in the mystery box.
There are seven gentlemen sitting in little stations all across the galaxy. You must find out why they're sitting there with these birds. By the end of the episode, at the end of the season, it's you. It's actually you, Michael Burnham. You're all seven of these back again. Congratulations. And now you have to go another 1,000 years ahead because we're out of story.
Your mother was six of them, but you're at least one of them.
Right, yeah. Oh, did we mention that it's actually your mother, too, because the DNA is pretty close? Like,
yeah.
we can keep on invoking seasons one and two of Discovery and keep on saying, that happened, too? Oh, my God. I can't remember. Yeah. You know, like, remember Arium, the little robot girl that got shunted out?
Of course. Yeah. 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 She got spaced.
She got spaced. That was a whole episode.
Yeah.
But this guy,
I like that episode, though, actually.
So much weird stuff happened in those previous seasons. I was so happy when they went, you know, to some different time, different dimensions, whatever, just to get away from what they've been doing for two seasons. But I've already mentioned to you guys that I was very happy with this episode because it feels very much to me like Star Wars in a lot of ways and less Star Trek. So I was expecting you guys to kind of be a little more down on it and not care about it as much. Because, of course, she's on a deserted planet by herself, runs into a smuggler who has to bring her to some sort of cantina-like place, you know, in order to help her. She's double-crossed, and they end up having to help each other in kind of a, you know, situation that neither of them can control. But, yeah, there's other things that I was noticing, too. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's kind of directly stolen from Star Wars somewhere.
What is this font? I'm curious how elegant this font is for Star Wars or Star Trek.
Yes, you stole what I stole. All caps. Thank you very much.
Almost like the Klingon fonts they were using in season one. It was that weird. True. Yeah.
Those are zoology fonts.
Yeah.
With like strange capitalization. Everything's capitalized, but some capital word letters get bigger.
Yes.
In font and
right.
And the kerning is all kind of a little wonky. I will say, Jason, that like. To answer your question, I was actually looking forward to it because Discovery felt so trapped by its own machinations of like, we are ahead of Enterprise, behind the original series, all this other stuff. They had no breathing room, you know, Earth,
yeah.
1933, you know, to get free. And so it's like, let's just go as far away as we can and just make Star Wars or Star Trek. Or it's a whole new show. I mean,
I think as long as they don't fall into that Voyager trap, I feel, which in this case, they've already, it doesn't seem like they're doing that at all, which is just kind of beautiful so far. I think it's kind of, you know, it's one of the things I hated about Voyager, which is it just took you out of everything that was plausible in terms of they're trying to like keep this structure, but this doesn't do that already. I don't know. It's impressive. I like
it. Well, but as the first episode of season two, very impressive start. You've got Captain Pike, you've got, you know, number one. Yeah. And then, you know, by episode four, you know, there's, you know, Emperor Georgios back and madness.
But there was enough talk about what the Gorns did in this episode.
I did appreciate it. Yeah.
Well, but as someone pointed out on Twitter that the Gorn haven't been discovered, literally in this, not until the original series, which is.
Oh yeah. Interesting.
Someone said that's like, true. How do you reconcile that? How, you know, how Burnham's like, wait, the Gorn? Oh my gosh. Like that's just a nonsensical word to you. Like, you know, so it is. I mean, unless when they went to the Mirror Universe, she referenced the Gorn because the Gorn were in Enterprise with.
She did a quick study on the other dimensional computer.
Yes, because so we start off with like we have this book or booker and this weird orc, this creature from Lord of the Rings, almost identical. I'm like, wait, this is one of those Lord of the Rings guys, you know, Hobbits are on the menu, boys. Like, okay, sure. we're out of ideas for facial prosthetics. We were with Weta. We found this, you know, but kind of a cool console, like little things kind of rise and fall, little sandy stuff here.
Well, it's kind of different technology, you know, it's other things just, like the bed or that the guy was sleeping in, all the computer stuff just kind of disappears and stuff. It's kind of different. It should be pretty cheap to do every single episode. Oh, no.
Here we go.
And now, joining us, ladies and gentlemen, from a wormhole in outer space, bring you the doctor.
We sent her the signal from the red angel.
And she's our red angel. Through
somehow.
The red angel.
Kim Miller, she's still muted, but...
But we see half of her face in a photo.
Yes, and you could too if you went on to Facebook.
Yes, as we've pivoted to the video.
Oh, there she is. Oh, I can't see my face. How stupid do I look?
Wait, where are you?
I'm at a coffee shop. I haven't watched the episode. I just wanted to visit you guys.
Oh, dear.
I didn't know you'd immediately start podcasting. I thought you'd chit-chat for a little.
Well, we chit-chatted for like a good 5 or 7 minutes, but both of these men have babies, so
true.
Chit-chat is of a lower degree. So, do you want to come back in a little while and chit-chat later on with us? We'll hang out.
Only when you're done.
I know you haven't watched the episode, Doctor, but what did you think?
It had a lot of problems structurally.
Oh,
no.
Like that.
Oh, call me
later. All right.
All right.
Weird zooming on the phone. I can't see anything.
All right.
You
can't see
it. Well, wait. What cafe are you at?
Bread and Sea.
Oh, Bread and Sea. Okay.
Oh, right. No Lestats for you.
No Lestats for you.
And we just see your giant finger in this. So
I know.
Sorry. It sort of looks like a creature from Discovery that we're going to watch in a little while.
Call me when you're done.
All right.
Bye, doctor.
Oh, bye. How do I get out of here?
Just leave her on.
Get her back.
All right. Well, that was the Red Angel appearing chronologically out of order to give us instructions. All right. So we've watched this goofball. Let's see what else you have. Oh, and then as promised, we are in Iceland. What a great location this is.
Well, this is where we tried to go, I think, like 10 times. Didn't we talk about this? Weren't there like $50 flights from LA and then like $800 flights back?
Yeah, there were some discussions about that.
For my 50th birthday, we had talked about taking, it was like maybe like $120 round trip flight to Iceland.
steerage.
Yes, in steerage.
In steerage.
but everyone balked at that, and instead we went to Yosemite, which was a good, the doctor was the one who suggested that, and we all kind of glommed onto that. But we could have been going on these.
The Iceland trip, everybody would have to hold a chicken on the plane. That was the only rule.
This is true.
Yes.
Yeah. Live chicken.
They have some of those like vertical, like you're almost like standing seats, you know, you're kind of like. Yeah. You
know. My 50th is coming up, so this is what we'll do. If everything's going back to normal, we'll go to Iceland.
Well, again,
the two moons of Iceland here.
Well, two moons or four moons, because as you can see, there's this gigantic moon here in the background.
That one, yeah.
And this is literally like they're walking here, and then like we have like a coverage shot, a reverse shot on her almost simultaneously. I don't know how this solar system exists. I mean, that planet should be ripped apart with this gigantic planet here.
Yeah.
And then there's like two other giant planets. Like the gravity there just doesn't exist.
Right.
But it is very picturesque. I will say that. I did appreciate that. Oh, and don't forget everyone, 18th most popular podcast.
Star Trek podcast?
I typed in best Star Trek podcast and something.
Oh, right. I heard you mention this. Yeah.
Yeah. Something called Feed Boom or Feed Blast or something said that the 60 most popular Trek podcasts you must listen to in 2020. I'm like, and somehow we were number 18, which seems like a complete scam. Yeah. So,
scam.
Have you been solicited since then? By you can get higher if you give us a little money.
No. Yeah. It's like Yelp. Yeah. It's like, well, we'll bump you up there. It's like, I don't know how I got there. I don't know if I want to be there, but I just like pointing that out. So
we're looking at this, where, you know, she gets the suit, the Red Angel suit, she programs it to go back to the wormhole and send the signal to Discovery. And then, why does she need to have it self-destruct? Was that like,
I don't know. I mean,
So my thing is, can Discovery still come through if the wormhole isn't there? I don't know any of these things.
Right.
So I'm like, well, if she went up there and destroyed it, now where's the ship?
This was answered.
They had to follow the coordinates of that she led them to, right, or something, or she was sending the signal, and they, you know, due to their drive, can go between dimensions. We know from season one, right, or whatever, so that they can jump in time too, right?
Jason, they opened up something. I don't know. Remember, like, there was like a living planet, and then Control had infected it, and it was going to destroy all life. That's
right.
Why she's so happy later on.
Right.
So they had to go in time so Control couldn't find them with this living planet of computer. This is just literally getting rid of plot. This is like, I have this plot point.
Right.
Here. we're looking at Burnham right now, staring at like that spacesuit, the Red Angel suit. Yeah. And it says, you have reached the year 3188, which sounded sort of like, you have reached, you know, Matt Thompson. Sorry, he's out
you
of
have reached
right
zoology.
You have reached zoology.
but this does give us this clearance again of like, they're so far away from everything, 930 years away, anything can happen.
Well, I do appreciate, this is one thing I do appreciate, is that they didn't go, like, I keep referring to Voyager, which I shouldn't, but somewhere else, like the Delta Quadrant, they're still here, so we still have familiar things. It's just so forward in space with all those Trek things that we still do know, which is kind of fun. So, but this, when that happened, I'm like, oh, okay. I'm looking at the opening credits, and there's, like, one person or two people. You know, I'm like, obviously, this whole episode was only her from the cast. There was nobody else in the cast other than the new individual, the new man who's in the bookers.
Is that how it was? There wasn't anyone in the
There was. There were, like, Doug Jones is in there, and I think Mary – is that what her name is?
Yeah.
Weissman, is that correct? I think there was only, like, three or four people in the opening credits, which is interesting because normally you'll see them. So I kept expecting to see them, and they weren't there, but I don't know.
Doug Jones was the giant slug. He did motion capture, so.
Right, yeah. he just all that suit, you know? He's just like, I can do it.
Oh, I forgot. That's another Star Wars thing, was when it spit her out. I was thinking about R2-D2 on Dagobah with the creature spitting him out and everything. I was like,
Didn't that happen in Solo?
Solo, it happened, yeah.
Well, there's a giant worm woman at the beginning.
Worm Woman.
Yeah, it's a
Worm Woman solo. Why am I forgetting
her name? It was such a fun, bizarre name.
It was like Madam something or other.
Lady Proxima, right?
Lady Proxima. Yeah. There we go. Lady Proxima.
Good that you remember this.
I dug it out of my Star Wars brain.
Doug Jones it out of your Star Wars brain, and now we're full circle with that conversation. Moving on. All right, so we have. I just want to put this up here. This is Michael Burnham going in full Michael Burnham. Martin Green. Here's one thing that I'm going to say is that there was a lot of one of the things. This is something I'm not a big fan of. Is Sonequa Martin-Green is a great actress. She's really good, but I think that either through direction or writing, they have her act at level 10 at all periods of time, generally.
I will one-up you on that because I noticed something in there too. I think it's a deliberate choice, and maybe you're right. Maybe it's coming from the director. Maybe it's a choice she's making as an actress, which kind of bugs the crap out of me, and I think I know what it is, which is she's a human that was raised by Vulcans. Every time she gets emotional, she has to pull it back in and be serious. And then she goes from 100 to like 1, and you're like, oh, that's really weird. That's just kind of crazy.
Or it's just she's acting in front of something that's not there, so you don't know the temperate levels in terms of how much you're supposed to be showing, which could also be true, too. You know.
Well, but people act in front of green screens all the time, and she's out here in Iceland.
Well, she's not particularly acting with anything in the scenes that Mike's showing here. She's just emoting.
We're ready to go.
But here's my problem.
We're ready to go. Yeah.
We're ready to go.
We're ready to go. Mute yourself, fool.
we're ready to go.
We get Matt's. If you're not watching, Matt is like contorting himself against his own green screen here. But what I'm looking at, if you're listening to the podcast, is Sonequa like in this as she's landed in the 32nd century, going through all of this histrionics, all of this acting choices, because she's so happy that there's still life in the universe because the Red Angel signals were correct and they destroyed control through Section 31 and all this worked. But here's the thing, I didn't know what the hell, I had to go like, oh, that's what she's reacting to. And my big point about this is that Sonequa Martin-Green, sometimes she emotes so much that we as an audience don't get a chance to feel that she's topping us. Mm-hmm. She's so overly excited about this stuff that it's like, okay, I mean, I guess, I don't know how happy I would be if I'm all alone and seeing like, oh, okay, humanity survived. She is so demonstrative about everything at all points in time that it doesn't give the audience a chance to emote. That's why sometimes you have movies where characters barely emote, because then you get to put your emotions in there and say, oh my God, she's not reacting, but I am. Yeah. It's like she takes all that space for emotions for us. And it's like, well, I guess I should be happy too. Because she's super happy. She's saying no, screaming, laughing, sobbing. She's going through everything. And to me, that was sort of a problem. And I think they corrected a little bit in this episode. So anyway, I wanted to point that out. Matt, are you in a safe place now? Are you stable? Are you?
just for a minute. I actually have to go. And the daughter is not napping yet. So I have to go drive her around in the horse's carriage in a land speeder. So. All right,
Well, we'll press through this. Whenever you have to go, it's fine. We will send you off into another dimension with the Red Angel. let's move on here. I wanted to point out, I posted this. They have a cut scene as Booker and Burnham are walking, and they're walking this direction. This picture, they're on the waterfalls. It's very picturesque in Iceland, and they're walking on the screen from the right side to the left side. Right. And where they came from is these incredibly dangerous waterfalls.
Right.
And I don't know how they got there, but somehow they're...
Wait, this is a cutscene, or is this in the episode?
It's in the episode. They're like, they're actually walking. Right. It's like a little kind of...
Lord it's got a transitional feet. Little shot, yeah.
They could have walked on the ground over here, but instead they chose to kind of Super Mario it over these rocks.
Super Mario.
All right, so Matt, if you're going to leave, I'm going to let in Andy Lowe. Andy Lowe is now joining us.
All right, I'll tag out here.
Andy Lowe?
Incoming transmission. I love this. So you'll say hello to him for a second as he comes in.
I'm changing of the guard.
Changing of the guard here.
Hey, there's Andy.
Hello.
Hello, how Andy. Doing? How are you?
Sorry, I'm a little late.
No, you're right on time. The Red Angel has dispensed you in the exact right moment.
Excellent.
Well, I appreciate that. Are you in engineering there? Where are you from?
I am. I am in engineering of the Enterprise D.
Enterprise D, as you should be. So we welcome friend of the pod, Andy Lowe, here, as we may have to say goodbye to friend of the pod, Matt Stompy Thompson. He'll stick around. We dispatched Ensign the Doctor because she has not watched the episode. So
she's in a coffee shop right now.
Yeah,
coffee shop. She's not in a coffee shop.
Well, but the question is, what century though? When?
That's a great question.
Yeah. So
Kim's always out doing something though. If COVID doesn't exist for her, so I'm out of coffee shop. I'm not getting my hair done.
Yeah. well, we won't disparage her right now because we don't know. Maybe in a different timeline. I'm not sure, but. But Andy, we are just going over the mystery of Burnham and Booker somehow getting on this little island here.
Yes,
having walked over these rocks, I guess I don't quite understand how they did this and why they didn't just walk on this hill over here. But
with their salmon-like ability to navigate.
Well, we know Booker he's almost Aquaman, right? He's pretty close to talking to everything. So
yeah, that's true.
Maybe he's summoned like salmon for them to walk upon, you know, like
salmon man.
I mean, everybody has a personal transporter in the future, but they couldn't transport from that point to that point without the dilithium crystal, I guess.
This is true. So
yeah, I was about to bring up that a point too, where it was like, yeah, okay, fine. Character development. Fine.
I approve of this, and we'll go back and talk a little bit more about your general thoughts about this, Andy, but I approve of this sort of, she has nothing at her disposal, and she's literally got to like get with this guy and walk. It's such a tropey thing. It is such a Star Warsy thing, but yes, let's just go walk somewhere.
Right.
Let's go, we don't need to carve out like, you know, the delta of, you know, the insignia so that Discovery can go pick them up. Let's just walk somewhere. Oh, we got to get over here. We got to walk to this place. Very fine with that. Yeah. So,
yeah, no, I mean, I agree too, right? And I mean, I'm sure you guys kind of already covered like everything leading up to this point too, right? Is after like ridiculous, nonstop, horrible things happening after horrible thing happening for two seasons and another year that we didn't get to see, right? It's like, it's the first time we actually get to see her just like breathe. And like, I really enjoyed like the whole Inigo Montoya moment where she's just looking at the badge and just reciting her name and her rank and officer thing as now I need to walk forward. I mean, like that was like, that's actually a really great actor character moment of where is this character now after 3 years of war and,
excusing the fact that like the first thing we ever saw of her was completely like taking command of the ship over her, you know, trying from her boss. But yes, like this back to basics, I am a Starfleet officer. Yeah, it is an interesting, it's everything of this episode is such a reboot, such a reset. Yeah. Like, let's just start.
Well, it also ties in very nicely with where we started out with the guy at the beginning who's been waiting, the only representative of Starfleet inherited from his father. And then she shows up and she is a Starfleet officer. It's going to,
One of the more flawed Starfleet officers you could ever pick, and maybe I'll go into that at some point in time. So it's like, I was going through your personal record, actually. Boy, you did a lot of bad stuff, but you're still a commanding officer of me. So I don't want to get too far ahead, but I like how like there was that moment where they're like, it is an honor to have you, Michael Burnham. No, the honor is mine. Will you lift the flag? Would you lift the flag? Wait, someone has to do something here. This can't be the standoff here of service.
You go first. No, you.
I did kind of, I did feel that a little when he was like, you know, we've been waiting for an actual, you know, somebody who's able to lift this flag. And so when she tells him that he's the most qualified of anybody, and then he's kind of like, so you're telling me for 80 years, my family has had this and can't lift it, but you're telling me I could have done it the whole time? Thanks.
It is kind of funny where like after 40 years, he's like, what if I was just captain? What if I just like, maybe I should just be in control. Like, who am I sitting around waiting for? You know, it's, because this person, well, anyway, we'll get forward to that. Yeah. So, because eventually they do land on Halo Planet, Blade Runner, basically, after the burn. Should we talk about After the Burn here for a second too? Because that's this huge drop of
the burn.
Burn.
Yeah.
Skipping past Michael Burnham's name for just a half second.
I thought it was a Bernie Sanders reference. Oh, yeah. After the burn. Feel the burn.
This dips deep into 2020 politics here. This is
now, am I the only one who, when you look at that kind of, you know, structure there where they have the, you know, is that where they are in the bottom shot here? Or is that just kind of a city structure? We don't even know, I guess. But it looks like a ship, right? That never got put together or something. If you look at the front, it's like
look like a space dock of some sort, right?
Yeah.
It kind of looks like from Beyond a little bit. You know, that was that thing where they brought it looks a little bit like that design element where they're bringing people in on that big tube, but I guess it's a ramp as opposed to whatever. But.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for those of you listening to the podcast, we're looking at three panels. One is Booker saying After the Burn. One is like this, the reveal shot of the planet, and then the third is of the interior of wherever they're at, Requiem or whatever it's called. What was that?
The Mercantile.
The Mercantile. Yeah. So I don't know where this
Trader Vic's.
It is sort of I don't know what the space station is hovering delicately above the city. Like, does anyone worry it's going to fall?
It reminds me of that giant space needle kind of thing from at the end of what was the third J.J. Abrams movie? Remember when they were on that spire with Idris Elba?
That's what I'm talking about. Yorktown Station.
Yeah. Like, it's a very cool CGI shot, and then we go in this kind of dark kind of weird Blade Runner kind of place. But I do want to talk about the burn for a second, because it is such this huge reveal that all dilithium just sort of exploded 120 years ago, which seems weird that like the Federation was going on for 700 years or 800 years. And then it's just gone after 100 years. Maybe
it's something that they're getting into deeper, which is they've already started with this in terms of what Star Trek originally was about, was all types of social issues. And one of the big social issues is environmental issues. Obviously this is a huge environmental, cause he's a, about species and protection and endangered species.
A plant whisperer.
The plant whisperer, or maybe it's something that has to do as a parallel in terms of symbolism with, how we run our society on oil, but maybe that's digging too deep. I don't know if that's what it is or not, or, the resources that we always have, which the original Star Trek did with all the dilithium stuff in terms of that, the whole thing has been dilithium crystals and TNG.
The whole planet's founded on fracking, Matt. I think you've got that backwards.
It's a fracking planet. It's a fracking planet.
Planet frack.
That's BSG.
Yeah, isn't it funny that like fracking now means like Battlestar Galactica, like frack.
Bring that up. So I'm going to Battlestar Galactica up in Alaska. Yeah, I know.
So we get into this mercantile area here, which is very Blade Runner 2049-ish. The holograms everywhere, Orions and Andorians talking to each other about nonsense. I don't know what's going on there. But it's very cool. I have to say, go, you guys. I mean, Burnham is stripped to her bare, basically. She has no place to be. She's not saving the universe. She's just walking somewhere. I love that, and she's not the most knowledgeable, important person in the universe. Last season, she was. She was the Red Angel. She saved the universe. Here, she's just a girl walking from point A to point B. Very happy with that.
Yeah.
I don't know what I put all these things in.
Let's get a sandwich.
Let's get a sandwich.
The only thing that survived from human technology is the fact that sandwiches did make it to the 32nd century.
Some replicators they have. Let's get a sandwich.
So we have those two goofballs, the Andorian and the Orion guys, who are now working together, which is a big reveal, I guess. I didn't know that was a huge thing. But he does mention he wants to get a sandwich. I jumped ahead, which was fine. Who is it? Booker betrays Burnham, which we kind of figured.
Right.
Because this weird orc is trying to get back to the Shire. It's almost like a one-for-one transfer, right? I mean, I'm looking at this guy.
So I have read elsewhere, they're saying that this is a Betelgeusean, which is apparently a throwback species or race from one of the movies, apparently.
Okay, okay.
I actually wondered if it was a Reman when I first saw it.
But Betelgeusean.
But yeah, you're
confused with
a
Betelgeusean.
Michael,
you know,
suddenly shows up. You know, it's like
you dive on the Remans there. Yes, they're only seen that one movie. Is that correct? The Remans were only in
just the one. Yeah, it
was very terrible TNG movie, right?
Yeah, Nemesis. Yeah, it was kind of a one-off reveal, and then
that's right.
And let's just forget we ever talked about it ever.
Yeah.
Once again, putting what's his name? The guy from Hellboy and from Sons of Anarchy.
You're right.
Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman.
Far too much makeup because his face is far more interesting without it.
It's kind of true.
It's like you are the most interesting looking human being. It's like let's put
keep covering up his face. Yeah.
I know.
And they're always like, yeah, but you can build off his face. Like, no, just stop that. I mean, you know, put an extra marshmallow on his cheeks and, you know, you've got whatever you want. So
what's happening?
It's always surprising to see him without makeup because then I realized, I always forget how old he is.
Yes. He is a billion years old, but he's still great. He's also in the Fallout series. He's the voice in the Fallout series.
Yes, I'm coming with you. Live long and prosper, friends. I am.
Oh, dear. The Red Angel.
Oh, fairly well.
Yes, my daughter is long life. Angel. She's pulling me away. So peace and long life.
Put him in the photon torpedo tube and shoot him off.
All right. Have fun, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you, friend.
Farewell.
All right, there he goes. He literally closed his laptop. If you're not
close the book on us.
You literally watch him get super tall for a second and then disappear. So, all right. This is such a rolling group here of people talking about this. I very much appreciate this.
I know.
Out of all of these pictures, and we're looking at this, the guy named Cosmo, Cosmo P. Kramer. This guy's named Cosmo, just so we know.
It is. Okay.
Yeah. I love this moment when they spray Burnham with this like goofy gas.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And for the first time in 21 episodes, Michael Burnham actually has legitimate fun.
Yeah.
You know, she's given this truth serum kind of thing and she acts like a goofball. Again, maybe way over the top. I mean, I hope that's not how
we
she
were discussing before you got on, Andy, how much we appreciate her as an actress because she's very good, but that she has these very strange, like massive emoting scenes. And I was saying, because she's also raised by Vulcans, she's got to rein it in super quick, which is a very weird feel.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, yeah, I didn't think about it in terms of the context of raised by Vulcans, but that is a very cool way to think about it, actually.
Jason sort of solved a problem without actually, I don't know if they've ever actually, like, he should go on the, you know, there's a subreddit called the Daystrom Institute where they solve all problems of plot
and
continuity. But yeah, my contention, Andy, is that sometimes she, Sonequa Martin-Green, sometimes overacts so much. I wouldn't say overact, but she acts so much, she doesn't give the audience an opportunity to feel emotions beyond what she's feeling.
Yeah.
You know, like, so like she's got that high ground of like, I'm so upset about this. And as we, as an audience saying, I'm kind of upset about this. I would say even in this, like when someone's drunk or under truth serum, you're trying to fight it. You know, so like you get that agency of like drunk people try really hard to pretend like they're sober and they don't. But at least this is fun. She's having fun, you know.
Well, like when she found life forms in the beginning of the episode and then she practically falls down crying because the system found life forms. For a second, I'm like, it didn't say human life forms. What if they're all like, you know, worms, you know?
Well, okay. It could be worms. But that was still felt consistent with like if you had watched the last two episodes of the previous season.
Yeah.
And like remembering what the stakes were of the nanites were going to kill all organic life, right?
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, that's a great callback. Yeah, you're right.
And let's not confuse
I had to remind myself of that.
I know. And we can't confuse that with Picard, where the robots from the different dimension were going to kill all sentient life except for robots.
Which, can I just say, honestly, that should have been the crystalline entity. I'm just saying. But
oh, yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, just have that thing show up and destroy all life from there. Yeah, yeah. It's well, they were just the big Dr. Octopus claws that came through that, you know. Yeah. But both series, like, no one cross-checked with each other. Like, oh, so in our finale, robots are going to destroy humanity. Wait. Say that again. Wait, oh, look at this whiteboard. We've got the same thing. Oh, we already shot it. So do we. Oh, yeah. you owe us a series. Okay. You know.
No, because, well, but our robots glow green. Oh, no, wait. Our robots glow red. Oh, okay. We're good.
All right. All right. Yeah. No one's ever going to put that together. So, yeah. But the point is, at least this gives her, like, for the first time in 20 episodes, Burnham actually has fun. And that's another, like, reboot on her character. She's not holding the fate of the universe on her shoulders repeatedly. So I enjoyed that.
Both the actress and the character.
Yes. Like, she doesn't have to, you know, carry the emotional weight of the plot as an actress.
What is happening in that bottom shot here?
I'm sorry. I'll answer that in a second. But Andy, do you want to make a point there? Or?
Oh, yeah. I was also reading another article review that was commenting of how on the nose. There's one point when she's going through her whole rant, her drug-induced rant, and she just stops and goes, "Oh wait, am I overcompensating?"
Yeah.
Which is basically like they just went through all the message boards of all, like, you know, and they just put it in as dialogue.
In some ways, it felt like they did read all the comments, all the message boards, and they did come to this point of, because some people, Midnight's Edge, have accused this character of being somewhat of a Mary Sue, of having the, you know, of being able to solve every problem, you know, taking all the world's weights on her shoulders. And I don't know if we need that in Star Trek. I think we just need people who are competent and are just moving through situations. And so in some ways, she was kind of intimating what the internet was thinking. Is she overcompensating in some ways? And this reset is maybe an opportunity for her to not have to deal with all that as the character and as the actress, and have fun. And we'll see how that goes. I mean, towards the end, she might kind of move back into that space, but we'll see. Jason, to elucidate this is... when they are underneath a waterfall, again, they go to a lot of waterfalls here.
Right. But this is after they escape together, yeah? And then they start disintegrating people. But yeah. I'm just looking at, that's a foot on the left side of the frame there, right? No?
It looks like it, but this is the head. So we're looking at, this is the head. This is his arm outstretched. She has a hand on his neck.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Because that looked like the head and the foot for a second. I'm like, are they... What the hell is going on here?
Well, I wanted to get the screenshot. So we have two screenshots, one of her laughing as Booker uses this crazy, like, force push machine. And she's like saying, what? Because 900 years, technology is really interesting. And they have these kind of stealth, I don't know what the hell, like these weird ice cream cone, like disintegrators on their hands that magically appear.
Yeah.
And she's just like, she's still under the truth serum, but she's thrilled with it. And then she goes about disintegrating dozens of people. And that's what I wanted to get, is her just like happily disintegrating these bad guys.
Yeah.
Very Star Wars.
It took me by surprise, actually. I'm like, oh, so they just killed everybody? Like, all these guys are coming after them?
Which I was like, okay, so she's drugged. So she's not quite as, you know.
When she's on trial for it later, at least she has a defense.
Yeah.
The judge is just like, you're here again.
Yeah. Those people in those weird, mysterious, like poorly lit Federation rooms there, and where she got sentenced. Well, it does put a strange contrast to the point where she and Booker work really hard to save this big space slug, but then these security guards who ostensibly are like, hey, Andorians 1 through 9, come with me. These people showed up in our space station and they destroyed a bunch of people. We have to go stop them. Like, great. My job is to defend the mercantile. That's also, then boom, they're dead. So like it's, and there's no stun. Like, so it, and then she's espousing the, you know, the tenets of the Federation, which
I totally dug about that one where it just like zooms out and knocks everybody over. I love that weapon. That was cool. Great.
Yeah, that's a nice little stunning weapon, but this was a little troublesome for me. There was just like all fun and games, and like these Andorians are being slaughtered, and Tellarites and Morn's race. And
it's going to start another war, which the rest of the series is going to be about, just like before when she killed the Klingon.
Right. Yeah, the Vulcan hello again. Yeah,
Vulcan, yeah.
Yeah, we're like they shot on the Klingons. Because, oh, this is how Klingons say hello. It's like, are we sure about that? Are we? okay, so this is this is what they've been fighting for. Is this big crazy slug thing, which Booker can talk to? He's the Dr. Doolittle of all creatures.
Another Star Wars reference. You're hauling Rathtars on this ship. Don't tell me you're not hauling Rathtars on this ship. I'm like, I'm hauling Rathtars.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, from which one? The Force Awakens? Is that the?
Yeah, Force Awakens. Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
I was just saying before you got on, Andy, there's so many, like, it felt like a very Star Wars episode to me rather than Star Trek in a lot of ways with the, you know, encountering the smuggler after you've been deserted on a planet and having to team up and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been a little indicative of
The Abrams verse.
Yeah.
I mean, Abrams verse certainly, but I feel like all genre storytelling is trying to deal with the ADD-ness of this YouTube viewing generation of consumer, right?
Sure.
I mean, everything, pacing is always breakneck, you know.
A lot of running.
Yes, a lot of running, a lot of firing, and then you have this rogue character, and we were talking about it because in Picard they have that same guy. I don't remember his name, but the guy who smokes cigars and has his rogue ship flying around. Even in, and I haven't watched as much of it, of Lower Decks, they have the daughter of the Cerritos' ship. She's sort of the rogue character. Mariner. But in all the other, is her name Mariner? Is that her name, or is that?
I think so.
Okay, but even. Like in all the original Star Treks, the person who was kind of the outlier, the person who was a little bit of the rogue, a little bit of the Han Solo type, was always the captain of the ship, was always the Kirk or the Janeway or the Picard, where like we are the police, but we're going a little bit outside the lines.
Right.
But we're still upholding the principles, whereas these characters are completely outside of the Federation. They exist outside, and the Federation is the stodgy types that they have to subvert in some ways. And so that it's an interesting change, but they keep going back to it. I mean, in Picard and in Discovery now, they're looking for their Han Solo, for whatever that means. So that's my big treatise on that. And there's a big space slug there.
Talked a little bit about him.
Yeah, we talked a little about him. And also, I kind of skipped over, I didn't get one of the shots of the reveal of the fact that Booker is actually a good guy. He's a zoologist, who Matt was earlier correcting us on zoology. This is zoology. But he owns this wildlife area to save all these animals, and they all swim. And
we don't really find out who the rest of those people are, right? Because there's a bunch of other guys with trench coats who are happy. But, like, do they work with him? Do they have the same powers he does? We're not really sure, but
he made sort of a throwaway line of like, you know, before what these creatures used to frolic in my planet before they was destroyed or something. And it's like, oh, so are you part of that?
And does everybody's forehead glow too? And
right.
Well, he said that his race was like, they're all hunters or something. And he was, you know, like, he's like a double outcast, right? Like, not only is he against the Federation or any tenant of any of that sort of stuff, but he's also an outcast from his own species who hunt animals using their powers, like their cheat code powers. You know, it's like, come whale, I am your friend. Ha ha, bang. You know, it's like, that's not nice. And how has evolution not stopped that from happening to the whale? You know? But and he has a cat. Let's just say he has a cat named Grudge. Yeah. So we're all gonna love him.
Boy, I mean, I can't believe the Doctor hasn't watched this episode because she'll be all over the cat.
That's true. I mean, the press photos had like one picture of each new character and like three pictures of the cat.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't see any of that. So, I didn't even bother to look at some of the press photos. I'm like, I'm going to go in this so cold, knowing nothing. Didn't know anything about this guy and his cat, but yeah, Kim should have sensed it. She should have been like, there's a great disturbance in the cat force.
Her whiskers could have sensed it.
Whiskers should have been flaring up. So then we come full circle and we come back to this guy, Aditya Sahil. Is that, that came and went. I have this on, I have his name as a subtitle. So I'm reading it. But he is the Federation. This guy has been sitting for 40 years.
Yeah.
Generations been sitting around waiting for the Federation to come back.
Waiting for that alarm clock bird to change colors every day. Just waiting for somebody to show up.
So, did his family, how did his dad meet someone? You know, and keep the you know, he had to leave at one point in time, or were there just more people sitting there? This help.
Maybe, you know, there's like a GoFundMe or something that they raised to kind of keep these three guys there for the last 100 or 200 years.
I mean, there's got to be more people on this station. I mean, it's represented very post-apocalyptic-y, where he's the one guy in the empty office just sitting there waiting. But I mean, you do get one establishing shot. It's okay, there's a whole station.
Yeah. That's
mostly run down.
I would hope so, because otherwise it is it's kind of the dumbest thing. He's almost a lighthouse guy. And then how do you find, it is such a quixotic thing, and it is almost dumb. It verges on the idea of being dumb. You know, it's I'm going to sit somewhere out on Santa Monica Pier waiting for the next Viking to show up. You know, it's not happening. You know, that is an impossibility.
Maybe he's got his iPad next to him, though. He's just been binging shows for the last 20 years. You know?
Could be. Yeah, he's just catching up. You know, he's watching. Yeah.
Finally caught up.
Yeah.
I do remember recalling, though, I mean, he does mention that there are two Federation ships that he is aware of.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Right.
But he says that their sensors only give them the ability to scan about 30 sectors.
Right.
Which I don't know how far a sector is, but it did make me wonder where in the galaxy they were, if they were Alpha Quadrant, Beta Quadrant, right?
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I forgot about there were two ships left, and we've gone on to this last shot of the Federation flag where no one wants to put up the banner. You know, it's almost like the end of Castaway, where Tom Hanks doesn't open the FedEx package, and it could be like a satellite phone. It could call for help.
Right.
It's dude, maybe if you open, unfurled that, there could be and here's the coordinates to the rest of the Federation, you know, and we've all been waiting for you. But the Federation flag, which used to have three big stars and then bunches of other ones, now has six stars. So it's been drastically scaled back. We don't know how big it is, but it is interesting now. It is. We are now going where no one's gone before, at least narratively for the show, as opposed to being trapped in you don't want to bump up against Enterprise or the original series or Next Generation. You know, it's all fresh, kind of like that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hopefully there's more than one person on this ship. Otherwise, it's been a long time for him to be on this weird thing with this bird, this digital bird, and a sand bed or something. I don't know what the hell that thing is. Is it that useful that the bed falls into the floor? I mean, there's so much space in this area, right?
Yeah.
Do you really need that? I mean, what does he do? What does he
It's got to be a nanobot bed, right?
Well, yeah, probably. It's probably like a nanobot.
I mean, that seems to be their aesthetic for the technology of the 30, what is this, the 32nd century?
Yeah, because if it's 31, then you add one, because there's the 0th century. This is always a difficult thing. Remember when we were oh, it's the 20th century, but in the 1999, you know.
It's nice to know that Sleep Number and Craft-O-Matic, all the beds in the future run on nanobots.
It did look like a very uncomfortable bed. I got to be honest. I mean, it's made out of the same material that his desk is, and really, he could just fall asleep on his desk, and it's about the same, right?
Yeah.
All right. So this episode had promise. I will say though, again, I really enjoyed Michael Burnham just being a human being, being out of her element.
By herself. For me, more than anything, without, like, you know, some of the crew showing up and doing dumb stuff.
Yeah. But towards the end, she started, like, I have to uphold the entire foundation of what the Federation is. I have to rebuild it from scratch. No, you don't. You don't. Just float around and do Star Trek things. You know, that's.
I mean, it's consistent for her character to make that choice. I'm hoping that once the rest of the ship and the rest of the crew shows up, it becomes, you know, not like one man's or one person.
I don't know if you have any kind of spoilery insight or know what's going to happen, but do you think they're going to kind of stick with this for a little while where, you know, the crew is going to be somewhere else, she's going to be trapped here, and then maybe mid-season they come back together? Or,
I mean, they have released a clip from next week's episode, which did tease what, you know, Discovery waking up.
Because they showed at the end of the episode, they had this season on, and so they showed kind of everything with the crew going on, but I just didn't have the context of, are they anywhere together, or is it just, I would kind of love it if they were separated for the whole season, just to, you know, break up the monotony of what was going on before with a crisis every, you know, 2 seconds of, you know, they're suddenly in a war.
Yeah. I mean, even if you know, like, yeah, theoretically they're going to crash land somewhere. Right. But even to just even like keep the two plot lines kind of parallel almost.
Yeah.
Cool thing. Right. Yeah. To let Burnham's path kind of do some of the world building.
Yeah.
And then let Discovery's crew have more kind of, right. I mean, this is the thing that I think Mike, you were talking about last season in terms of giving moments for this crew to develop relationships with each other. Right. Like that was, you know, we had maybe two episodes where, you know, like the episode where what was her name? The robot?
Arium. I was just going to say. Arium.
Where Arium died was like the first time we actually got to see this crew being a crew together.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. Honestly, it took its time. We got to, you know, get some emotion and then immediately mourn for this character.
Right. Now she's dead. And then the character who played her in the first season is back.
Right.
Because we recast her with this other character, and then we killed her off, and then we brought... Yeah, it's exactly... I think, giving a moment... As you were talking about this, Jason, to go back to your idea, I mean, I think about in Game of Thrones where you had characters like the Starks who were separated for seasons on end.
Yeah.
And then when they finally get back together, I mean, just the emotional... The emotional payoff for an audience was so strong, even though it kind of went off the rails after that.
Right.
I wouldn't mind, like, as you said, like, give us seven episodes where they're trying to.
Or even the Lannisters. I mean, when you think about, you know, third season, Jaime Lannister going off and being captured and everything. And yeah, the separation and bringing back together is an interesting dynamic.
I don't trust them to do that. I have a feeling in a couple episodes they'll all be back together and it's
probably
like the new conflict. But I would love that because, again, we're season three. We know who these characters are. Yeah.
But we know that Tilly's going to have a wisecracker on top of her wisecracking. So, you know, I'm just waiting for the third and that Matroska doll of wisecracking people.
I forgot about that in like this season on like another wisecracker on a wisecracker. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just.
And then Tig Notaro is just going to stand next to them going.
Mm. Do you think? Do you remember like there's a throwaway line that's like all dilithium blew up and then like the Booker at one point in time says like, oh, we need trilithium. And I was like, maybe that's what they're talking about. It's like Tig Notaro and then Tilly and then this other girl. Maybe that's what trilithium really is that these three wisecracking characters all together in one room powering with snark. You know what I mean? Like this weird snark drive that is powered up here.
Yeah.
All right, let me bring the doctor back in here.
Oh, dear. And I'm going to have to take off here, but I'll wait for the doctor for a moment.
Yeah, just for a second. I just texted her return since we've sort of finished off this episode here. I am, as with the second season, I am hopeful for what the season could bring. You know, last season they had Pike, and then they kind of botched him a little bit, but then they decided to strip him away and make their own season, and then COVID is going to push that to 2025 probably.
So, yeah.
Alex Kurtzman.
But that's probably, of all these series that they're currently making, that's probably the one you're most excited about, right? I would assume is the one.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It's so, it was just so good to have just someone in command who was competent and exciting and in command.
Yeah.
And authoritative. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
because even with Picard, it's like, well, I'm in command, but this isn't my ship. And like, oh, you've taken everything we love about this character and, you know, stripped it away. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for making us upset by that. So, you know, we had almost 30 seasons of TV shows of, you've got a captain and he does these things, or she does these things, or it does these things. Why are we trying to break that? Why are we breaking that consistently and putting in Han Solos and doing the opposite of it?
You know, that was actually something that I realized about, so I'm actually really enjoying Lower Decks. I don't know if you guys are, but
I have not seen it yet, to be honest. I don't know if Mike has watched it either.
I've watched the first two episodes and I've been intrigued to watch the whole season. And I am going to do that with my son. So we will be doing that. So, but
I think you'll have fun, Mike, because I mean, cause they, if for no other reason, they go deep into like lore and references. It's like, there's some really, and it's like TOS and Voyager and like cover everything. But, the interesting thing is like, it is focused on a bunch of ensigns. But what I realized like by the end of the season, and hopefully I'm not spoiling anything, is that what we're watching is the origin story of a captain. And that's actually, that like,
that's,
you know,
cool.
Once I clued into that in the end of the season, I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun. This is going to be cool, actually.
Yeah.
Of asking what is it that takes, you know, a little ensign and turns them into a captain material, right?
Yeah.
Right. The Jack Quaid character, is that who he, or is
I will
it?
Say nothing more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's, in this show, Discovery should have been about that to some degree, right? It is like a lower ranking character rising up. And so
by assuming control from her captain and murdering her. Yeah.
Well, yes. I mean, like the first episode, it's like, wait, what did we just do? I mean, again, like that, like, and this was Brian Fuller's, you know, a baby Discovery,
yeah,
in which he was going to every season, you know, whole new show. Basically,
yeah,
we were going to discover new parts of Star Trek. And
right,
then he got axed and Me Too'd and who knows, you know, what else happened to him. But, and then they kind of had to, you know, revamp all that, but, the Doctor's returning here in a minute, I would be very much into it. And, you know, to be honest, Annie, I mean, it is, you know, there are other forces, there are meta forces, which is, because obviously I, at one point in time or another, I was in line to maybe be part of one of these shows and I've been passed up on all of these shows. So, and when people say, oh, it's pretty good, it references so much old Star Trek. It's like, really? Wow. I wish I was experiencing
that.
I just wish I knew more about Star Trek to be able to get it in. If you listen to the podcast, I have the Voyager and the Pasteur. And they're fighting right now, and then all of a sudden the Excelsior shows up, and I don't know what that means. Oh God! But
and the return of the Doctor.
Family.
She got here just in time to stop your self-destruction.
And she has a new picture too. Look at that. So.
Oh, now from the bowels of Lamb's players.
We only turn on one light.
Yes, yeah, Kim is now interestingly
holding up
here
a Halloween candle to her face. Oh,
are you on stage, Kim? Are you in the Lamb's Players Theater?
Yes, here because we're trying to save money. Because yes.
Oh God,
theater needs your money right now.
Yeah, it almost looks like it could be like,
sure,
one of those, like a
oh wow
background.
Oh, I'll turn on the overhead lights. Hold on.
Oh, we need to save money, but screw that. I'm turning all these on.
Immediately, the production value.
Let's just hope, you know, artistic director Robert Smith does not hear this podcast.
Yeah, it's Why not by how much? It still looks like a weird creative background. But yeah, so yeah. So yeah, Kim Miller has joined us here. Returned from the wormhole.
Wait a minute, are you recording?
Yes.
No, of course not at all.
I thought we were just hanging out.
Oh well, we'll end this here. We will end this.
Yeah, so, I'm gonna have to go, so it's a good spot to end.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here. I hope you enjoyed listening or watching or experiencing in whatever way you want to, or feeling it through animals and plants. as if your species does that, but what a lot of fun here. We will be watching more Discovery, and we'll hopefully have Andy and Jason and the Doctor.
And we finally reached 50% diversity on the pod here.
Oh,
oh
my god.
Oh yeah. This is...
thank God Matt left.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Yeah, but all right, but thank you so much for joining us here. I'm Mike McCafferty.
Oh, hi. I'm Miller. I wasn't even here.
The least qualified answer for this podcast.
And I'm Chief Engineer Jason McCarris.
Yay.
I'm Andy.
And I just want to talk about
Star Trek!
Star Trek!